Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's Mind Week podcast. I'm Steve Seiper, and this week I'm joined just by Thomas Henderson. So it's not, you know, the amount of people, but it's the quality of the people this week. Thomas is good people.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, so we are just going to skip Promote Extend Trade this week, which sucks because it was going to be a Bret Hart-themed Promote Extend Trade.
Oh, it's his birthday, right?
Yep. So we're just going to review how the Mets affiliates did this week. And something to note before we proceed, because Tuesday is the 4th of July, all the affiliates had their off day shifted. Everyone is off last Tuesday. And instead, all of the series that, you know, normally would end on Sunday, they're going to be ending on Monday. So there's still going to be one game for each affiliate that we're not going to be recapping and getting to, but doesn't really make much of a difference this week. Syracuse Mets, they played the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders this week. They were coming in with some momentum. They surged at the end of the first half. They won 9 of their last 12, but they kind of hit the brakes when they started playing the Rail Riders. They went 1-3 against them. They have a late game on Sunday, so we're not going to be getting to that. And then, of course, Monday's game, we're not getting to that either. So maybe they salvage the series. Maybe they split it 3-3 if they win both games. Who knows? But as things stand right now, Syracuse is 1-3 in the second half, dead last in the International League North. So as much as things change, they stay the same, unfortunately.
And they got, like, blown out in both games.
Yeah, it has not been pretty.
Like, it was, like, 10-3 and 8-3 or something, and they weren't really in either game. It was one of those.
No. The offense for Syracuse just feels like kind of stagnant right now. And part of that is Ronnie Mauricio has been coming back down to earth. It's been about a month now.
He hasn't been great.
No. Mark Vientos, you know, since coming back to Syracuse, has kind of been sputtering, you know, getting his bearings back, I guess. It's, you know, when you have Carlos Cortez doing all the heavy lifting, not optimal.
Yeah, it's just that's where they are as a level. And really the whole minor leagues is just a few guys at every team and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Binghamton Rumble Ponies, they play the Hartford Yard Goats this week. And same thing basically happened with them. They were coming into the week with a little bit of momentum on the side, but it sputtered. They are 2-3 against Hartford. Hopefully they split things tomorrow and don't lose the series outright. So they are 2-3 in the second half with those two wins and three losses against the Yardgoats. So that is good for third in the Eastern League Northeast right now. And they are a game and a half behind the Portland Sea Dogs and the Somerset Patriots. They're both tied for first place with a 3-1 record. Binghamton, they're going to be playing Portland on Tuesday, once they wrap up this current series against the Yard Goats. And the Portland Sea Dogs are a good team. They were in first place for most of the first half before they kind of lost some steam at the end to the Patriots. So going to be a tough upcoming series for the Rumble Ponies.
Yep. It is. And they're just kind of blah, too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they had some solid pitching early in the year. They had kind of a couple of, I don't want to say no names because it's not nice, but they had some guys outperforming what you would have expected, and those guys are kind of not showing up right now, which is
they're kind of coming back down to earth, which is happens.
Yeah, it is what it is. The Brooklyn Cyclones, they played the Jersey Shore Blue Claws. Again, they also slowed down a bit after dominating the first place Hudson Valley Renegades last week. They are 2-2 against the Jersey Shore Blue Claws. There's a game that they're playing right now. It was delayed because of some rain in Brooklyn over there.
Yeah, it was thunderstorming.
I can't tell you how the game is going to end, but odds are the Cyclones are going to lose because the game is delayed with them losing like 8-6. So let's assume Brooklyn loses. They are 5-2. In the second half right now, possibly 5-3. Either way, though, they're still going to be above 500 in the second half. And they are going to be either in second or third place, again, depending on how this last game goes, trailing the first place Aberdeen Ironbirds.
And they've been flashing more.
Yeah, Kevin Parada is finally showing up. The pitching has been outstanding.
Blake Tidwell has been having some good starts, and so there's been a lot more to kind of open your eyes on and be like, interesting. Like, this is kind of, there's more stuff happening with them than any other level right now, which is kind of what we expected, I think, coming into the season. We were kind of looking at them as a place that could be exciting because of Parada and Tidwell and everything else and Alex Ramirez, but it hasn't really, the first half was kind of rough for them, so it's nice to see the second half start off nicely.
Yeah, I mean, if Tidwell can continue the way he's been pitching, and if Parada can continue the way that he's been hitting both of them the last 3 weeks or so, I mean, that would be a very nice gift.
Yeah, for sure.
St. Lucie Mets now, they played the Dunedin Blue Jays, and they went 1-4, so not a great start to the second half of the season. They are 2-5 with the conclusion of that series on Monday. They are 4.5 games behind the Daytona Tortugas. Just not great, but that's basically... Yeah, they're just
not. They just don't got the juice.
Yeah, that's been St. Lucie since the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I think they are what they are, unfortunately. This year, at least.
Yeah, similarly to, you know, the Brooklyn guys heating up, though. Jet Williams has been heating up down in St. Lucie. Jacob Bramer, he's hurt now, but again, he was also starting to heat up. So maybe better things are in store for St. Lucie.
And Raymer's probably like a top 10 prospect at this point for the Mets. And yeah, I mean, the guys who you would want to see doing some stuff at St. Lucie are doing it. It's just they need to be a little better. Like, the pitching is just so bad.
Yeah, there's promise, but promise does not always manifest itself to reality.
And you still want to see guys like Jet just literally hit the ball better. And, like, Jet's getting on base, and he's walking a lot and doing all that stuff, and that's great. But also, I would like to see Jet hit more than he is. Just, he's hitting, like, 230. Like, obviously, batting average isn't the be-all, end-all in today's game, but you don't want to see that at the St. Lucie, you know?
Yep. Well, at least we have the FCL Mets. They are the smallest team, but they have the most heart. What is height does not determine heart? FCL Mets, they went 2-1 this week. They are 11-7 on the year. They are
They're fun.
The best team.
They're fun.
I wish we had more data on them. I wish we had more coverage on them, more eyeballs, more video cameras. It's the place to be. They're the team to be.
Yeah, and like that's good and bad. I'm obviously you would like to see some better stuff in the upper minors, but also it's nice to see your lower minors guys playing well. Like even we've been maligned about not ranking Nick Morbido or anything, but he's been all right. Like he had a big game yesterday because I did the recap yesterday, but he's been better than you would expect. And there's been some nice pop-up guys and stuff. So some pitching, especially.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see.
Stuff is percolating down there.
162 games of a baseball season can feel like a real grind to watch, especially if the team you're watching is the 2023 New York Mets. Golly. But you can put the excitement back into each and every game with MyBookie. Run lines, money lines, props galore. Nobody gives you more opportunities to win than MyBookie. Getting started is super simple. Deposit $200 and play with $300 instantly. Just use promo code Applesauce or follow the link in the show notes to claim a MyBookie deposit bonus of 50% of your initial deposit. Whether you're a diehard fan or a newcomer to the sport, there's never been a better time to join the MyBookie family. Go ahead and sign up today using the promo code Applesauce or follow the link in the show notes and secure your first deposit bonus of up to $1,000. Yes, up to $1,000. Whatever you put in, they'll meet you halfway, all the way up to $1,000. Again, this has been a rough season for the Mets thus far. So put a little more fun into it by using MyBookie. But anything, anytime, anywhere, with my bookie.
All right, so last week we all made our own draft selections. I wish Lucas and Ken were here this week to join us, but they're not, so we're going to shit all over them. No, we won't. So with the Mets' second pick, Ken went with right-handed pitcher Steven Echevarria from Milburn High School in New Jersey. And then with their two third-round picks, he went with outfielder Ryan Lasko from Rutgers and right-handed pitcher Josh Knoth from Patchogue Medford High School in Long Island.
Yeah.
Lucas, with his two picks, the second rounder he selected was shortstop Josh Rivera from University of Florida. And then with the two third-round picks, he went with third baseman slash outfielder Matt Kovath from North Carolina and right-handed pitcher Aiden Knack from Bishop Vero High School in Florida. Any feelings about either one of their drafts?
Horvath is interesting. I almost picked him because he was like a guy coming into the year, and then he just fell off the map. So that's kind of like an interesting post-hype type draft pick where
there
was a reason why he was considered like a first-round pick earlier on. I think even coming into the season, it was one of those like way too early mock draft things. He was like a high pick, and then obviously stuff happens and the season happens and guys pop and whatever. But if you have that talent back then, like, it's not saying it's gone forever. Like, there's some reason you were ranked that high, so I don't mind that as a post-hype. And Knoth, I also picked. So I think you picked him too.
Yeah. So I wish Lucas was here because I was gonna sit him down and be like, dude, why did you not pick Josh Knoth? You know, we all last week we all independently made our draft selections. We didn't really discuss very much. You know, we've discussed a lot about like the first round guys and stuff, but we haven't really talked about anything past the first round independently. Me, Thomas, and Ken, we all picked right-handed pitcher Josh Knoth as our third-round guy. So I don't know what happened with Lucas. He's not, like, in the hive mind enough or something. And he did pick a prep right-handed pitcher as his final guy.
Right, and he just didn't pick the one that we...
Yeah, he just didn't pick the right one. Well, let's talk about Josh Knoth while we're on the topic, and because so many of us picked him. He has a really good curveball.
Mm. That's big, like, and that's it. Like, not it. Obviously, he throws like 95, 96, and he's relatively short. Obviously, he's not a short person in terms of life at 6'1", but in baseball, that's a little short. And that's that combination will, if he was 6'5 and did what he did, then he would probably be going way higher than this. But also, I've seen him mock to the Mets in the first round. I don't remember what publication it was. I wish
were
I could
they high remember. By any chance?
But I saw him mock to the Mets at 32 and as like a cut type thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just, I'm finding Northeast guys a little more interesting than I thought kind of a few years ago, because less people care about Northeast baseball prospects in general. And cold weather in general, also like Jared Kelenic is a big example of that, being from Wisconsin. And I think there was a few other ones who have been cold weather guys. I mean, there's a guy who the Mets have been linked to, Kevin McGonigal. Is it Kevin?
I believe, yes, Kevin.
He's from Pennsylvania, and if he wasn't in Pennsylvania, he might be going higher. You know what I mean? So It's one of those things where it's kind of like, I don't want to say an untapped market, because it is worse competition here, speaking of the Northeast, than it is in the South and in California and stuff. But if a guy's good and worth drafting, he's good and worth drafting if he's from here too. So
right. I mean, if you throw 95...
and have a 3,000 RPM curveball, like, I'm going to want you in my organization. And, exactly. Like, the thing with Knoth is he has some downside risk as a reliever, because he doesn't have a changeup at all right now. But, hey, if the floor if you're picking a guy in the fourth round and the floor is Seth Lugo-y curveball, you can make that a multi-inning reliever and be fine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, you don't want that. Like going back to Tidwell, he has reliever downside too. But if he's a reliever that the Mets use in the seventh inning in 2 years, we're not going to be thrilled that the second round pick, or I think it was a complimentary a back end of the second round pick guy. But still, like, that's fine, you know, even if it's a little disappointing for a pick itself, because you'd rather a starter. But still, having a floor like that's nice. So that's really why I like him.
Mm-hmm. Well, since they're not here to really talk about what went into their rationales and everything like that, and I don't think anything is particularly egregious with either one of their, you know, neither one of them went off the deep end.
No, yeah, both of those were fine. Like, yeah. I was like, okay, yeah, sure.
So let's look at your guys then. You had in the second round left-handed pitcher from LSU, Ty Floyd. And then with the two second-round picks, obviously Knuth. And the second one was shortstop Sammy Stafora from Panis High School in New York, wherever that is. I probably should have looked that up, where that is.
I think it's upstate.
Probably. I mean, it's either upstate or Long Island somewhere. So
that's true.
It's not here.
It's not Brooklyn, yeah.
We know that much.
But Ty Floyd's not gonna, I picked Ty Floyd and he's not gonna be there. Like, he's probably gonna go in the first round. But
yeah, he had a pretty impressive outing in the College World Series last weekend. He struck out 18 guys.
It was 18 or 17.
Yeah. That'll get you noticed.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I hate how late the draft is now, but this definitely allows these college guys to make themselves a lot more money with going out and striking out 17 guys in the College World Series, in game one of the College World Series, and winning the game. The LSU won that game, you know, and that's going to be the Ty Floyd game, you know. So, but I mean, for him, it's his fastball is really good. It's the shape is incredible. It has the RPMs that you want. It has the velocity that you want, and he has a projectable frame, being a very tall boy. I think he's like mid 6 feet off the top of my head. So yeah, it's just one of those things where that's a projectable modern pitcher that the Mets have not really, that type of guy the Mets haven't really, I still don't think they've gone after, even with the newer drafting philosophies. Like, Tidwell's fastball is okay. Vassell's fastball is okay. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have that guy who's like, his fastball is one of the more interesting parts of his arsenal. Like, they have Tidwell's stuff as his breaking pitches, and Vassell's stuff as his breaking pitches, and like, going back to Jose Buto, it's his changeup. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. It was like Matthew Allen had stuff like this, and that's why he was such the prospect that he was considered, you know? So I think Floyd would be the number one prospect in the number one pitching prospect in the Mets system kind of right away, just because he has the stuff that seems like it's a next step above even the Vassals of the world. But
that's a good question.
They would probably have to take him in the first round at this rate. And I don't know if that's the type of direction they go in round one, even now.
Let's see, if you had to put up Blade Tidwell versus Ty Floyd, I guess Floyd would.
Yeah, I just like his stuff
on top. Yeah.
Like, Tidwell's weird, because you'll watch him and he'll shove in one outing. Like, he did this week. He had like a crazy good outing. Like, he struck out 11 or something.
Yeah.
But then there's times where he cannot throw a strike with his fastball at all. The only pitch that he could get over is a slider. Mm. And even when he does, it's like, okay, yeah, I could see him being a reliever. And he's so inconsistent in his start-to-start things, and obviously that could change. And this is his first professional ball. Who knows what happens next year when they hopefully have a newer front office, if the Stearns leaks are true and David Stearns gets more of his guys involved, you know, if that comes to pass. So I don't want to say the book's out on him, but it's one of those things where no one in the Mets system has stuff like Floyd does, even without him throwing a pitch in the system yet. And that's both an indictment on the system and a compliment to him. So that's why I wanted to highlight him. with my first pick. Because even though I don't think he's going to be there, I think they would have to take him at 32 or 30, wherever they're picking. It would still be a fun pick.
Yeah, I mean, there's, I mean, obviously there's a 50-50 chance either he is or he isn't. But, you know, I he is a guy that is about right where you would think he would get selected. Somewhere 25 to 35, maybe.
Yeah.
So.
And I feel like his stock has risen even more as we've gotten away from his performance, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of those things where people are like, he made himself money. That's really the best way to put it. He just made himself a lot of money in that performance.
Yeah, listen, when literally the last time you pitch before the draft, you are dominant in the college World Series. That's definitely going to help your case when you're negotiating with teams over money. But good for him.
Oh, for sure. Good for him. Great for him. That's the one positive about the draft being at a different time, like I said. Like, a guy could really put himself on the map in a way that he couldn't before.
Mm-hmm. And I was also considering Floyd for the second round pick. I ultimately didn't, but I went with Brandon Sproat, who is a familiar name for many reasons. A, he pitched opposite of Ty Floyd in that same game. Didn't win. Didn't do as good. And obviously, the Florida Gators did not win the College World Series. And then, of course, the Mets also drafted him last year with their third-round pick, and he's the reason why the Mets are getting the second third-round pick this season. And I'm very torn on him. He did not live up to expectations this season.
Yeah, the fastball's okay.
He was only okay, yeah. He's a kind of guy, though, that I feel like the Mets could actually work with and help. I mean, they worked with Mike Vasil and Dominic Hamill in terms of, like, pitch selection, which pitches to use. You know, I want to say it was Mike Vasil. In college, he used a two-seam fastball.
I think it was Vasil at Virginia, yeah.
Right, and
because I remember it was all kind of messed up at Virginia, like what he was doing. But that's not a great pitching dev school.
And the Mets had said, hey, listen, your four-seamer is better than your two-seamer. Or your two-seamer is better than your four-seamer. I don't remember off the top of my head. But they basically had him, you know, change the kind of fastball that he's been throwing. And Mike Vasil has had a pretty good first half of the year this year.
Oh, and yeah, I mean,
you know.
You can make the case that he's their number one prospect right now, if you would have to do a top 25 over.
Which is a little frightening, but yeah.
I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm saying, like,
yeah, no, but it's a case that definitely made.
He's in the conversation for, he's in the top three regardless, and you could make the case for him being one.
But similarly, Sproat seems like a guy, like, you just, he has a lot of natural movement on his fastball. Don't use a four-seam grip. Don't throw it as hard as you can. Use a two-seam grip. Throw it a little hard. Let that movement do what it needs to do. So I think that that's, you know, something that the Mets could actually work with there. And also, I was a little lazy because if the Mets draft him, that's a lot less work than I have to do because all that typing that I did last year, it's still relevant. So.
And they also, like, they've double dipped before. They did it with Carlos Cortez, and
yeah, yep.
So it's not out of the ordinary.
It definitely is a possibility. And also, I think that he could be a underslot guy that they can use the savings and underslot in a way that everybody wins. Like, he'll make more money slightly underslot with the second, well, with their first round pick this year than he would have if he signed at slot value with the third round pick last year. So, like, you know, that's a win-win to me. Everyone wins. And I feel related because a guy like, I feel like Josh Knoth is probably going to be hard to sign.
Yeah, I could see that, especially because his just being on Long Island and the way less competition out there than anywhere else, he might want to prove himself on a bigger stage to try to right, get more money in the draft next time.
Yeah, he has a commitment to Ole Miss. That's a pretty decent
It's not a bad team.
Yeah, so he definitely that definitely is something, you know, you go to college from Long Island to Mississippi, you put in some good numbers, and then all of a sudden you are like a top draft pick. So some extra money could definitely help entice him. So Sammy Stafora, your other third round draft pick.
I've seen him mocked in the first to the Yankees, so look at me finding diamonds in the rough.
So basically we just all you have three picks and you got three first rounders there.
But yeah, a lot of what the mocks ironically are saying is similar to Volpe, a little bit northeast shortstop, but he's a natural athlete and good enough to stick at shortstop probably for the decent immediate future, if not the long-term future, which is always great. And he's a bit of a work in progress offensively. Like, he's been good, obviously, because he's playing way less competition than normal. But and he's been great. I like doing the whole barely striking out thing, all that stuff. But there's a lot of like natural pop and natural stuff that when he gets coached up in a better system, either it being a college program or a major league or a professional program, you could really see where you're kind of buying him, and he's a real project if you're going to draft him now, because it's just way less of a he's just not a polished he's not a polished hitter yet. He's a polished defender, and he's playing some center field too, which is very nice to see the shortstop center field flex. That's always very fun because that gives you a lot of creativity and a lot of flexibility, even if he ends up like, I don't want him to be a utility guy, but if he does end up a utility guy like that, then that's really good that he'll be able to move around the diamonds. And also it's different now. Like, he could play 5 days a week and play three different positions and nobody cares. He could go full Ben Zobrist. But yeah, it's just, for me, it's taking a guy with a floor of athleticism with speed and athleticism with his defense, and taking someone who has interesting offensive characteristics and understanding that, hey, we're going to have to get him to the next level. Can the Mets do that? I don't know if these Mets can, but I am working under the assumption that David Stearns is coming, and he does a better his organizations, while the Brewers don't exactly make the best hitting prospects in the world. He kind of does the one size fits all. You're going to hit 240 with 25 home runs philosophy, and sometimes it'll pop and sometimes it'll really make you worse. That's a lot better than what the Mets are doing right now. And so I'm okay with drafting a bit of a project if I have a working assumption that someone with a better player development philosophy is coming soon, before really anything happens, you know? Like, it's not like we're getting 8 years of Sammy messing around in the minors before someone comes. Like, if Stern's getting hired, he's getting hired in, like, 2 days after the World Series is over. Like, it's kind of an open secret, you know, the way that John Heyman's talking in the Post and all that stuff. So obviously things could go sideways and then you're stuck with a project that the Mets might not know how to handle, but I'll take that risk.
Yeah, you can always trade him.
Yeah,
you could always trade capital. Of course, the Mets haven't been the best at maximizing those trades, but hey, what are the Mets good at? Jesus Christ. Not much. Well, with my third round pick, I went with Kemp Alderman, outfielder from Mississippi. I just like the power.
Yeah.
He hit 19 home runs this year. That was tied for seventh in the SEC. In the draft combine, he's had multiple exit velocities over 115 miles an hour. And, you know, the Mets kind of did something similar with Pete Alonso. They drafted him in the – was he the second round pick?
Or I think he was the second.
Okay, so they drafted him the second round. They identified that he has a shit ton of power, make some swing adjustments, and here we are. Similarly, you know, Alderman is a guy that has that shit ton of power. Can work on improving swing decisions and chasing fewer pitches, similar to kind of Ronnie Mauricio. Kind of has that similar floor. will he be able to fix that? I don't know, but
yeah,
power is a tool that you really can't teach. Raw power, you know, you really can't teach it. He has it in spades. And why draft, you know, a guy in the first round in that kind of vein? What was his name? We spoke about him a couple of weeks ago from Wake Forest. Brock Wilkin.
Yes. Like, you can take, yeah.
Right. Why draft that guy in the first round? You can basically get the discount version of him in the second round and just kind of hope for the best.
And power is one of those carrying tools that if you could even figure out a little bit of hit tool to it and just refine it a little bit, then the power is going to go a long way, because it'll paper over a lot of other issues if the guy could hit home runs. And that's really just baseball now. Like, look at the Braves, you know?
Yeah.
The Braves are the prototype for this, and all they do is win because they maximize their ability to hit home runs. And a home run is better than a single, you know, any way you slice it. So I don't mind taking guys like that, taking swings on big exit velo strong guys and seeing if you could get them to hone in the rest of their game. Because if you could hone it in even a little bit, then you're really cooking. And if you could hone in a lot, look where Pete Alonso is. That's obviously a hugely, I don't want to say unlikely. Unlikely seems unfair, but that's like the perfect outcome.
Yes, that is being very optimistic.
Yes, like, I'm not saying he's the next Pete Alonso, but it's more like...
He's the next Luke Voit, that's
still... Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Because Luke Voit was a great addition for the Yankees for a few years before it kind of went away. And the Mets could very much use some guys like that, that they could just call up and could do a job hitting home runs for a while. And if it only lasts 3 years, that it is what it is.
Yeah. And my favorite thing is he caught like 4 games this year, so
emergency catcher vibes.
Exactly. Give him a mitt, give him the catching gear, and give him a helmet, and he's the new catcher.
Teams should do that more with guys who have like some type of, like, obviously not everyone can do it, but just convert a guy to catcher. Go full J Jabs, bro.
I miss J Jabs. Who is that? I guess the emergency catcher would be Luis Guillorme.
Yeah, for sure.
Not a good situation to be in, though, when you have to call in your emergency catcher.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so this is our last show before the actual draft happens. How are you feeling? You know, what you went with Rock Kalaski with your draft follow. Do you still want the Mets to go a draft with Rock Kalaski? Or
have I'd be totally fine with that. I was thinking about this before started. I was mulling my answer to this because it's just it's so hard to know now. Like, when we sit here now, it's really hard to, and I know this sounds like a total cop out, but when you're watching the NFL draft, right? If you're picking 30, you know who's going to be there, and you know what your team needs are. But in baseball, like, weird shit happens, man. Like, and it's so, you'll read 4 mocks and it'll be 4 wildly different names going to the Mets. Like, I saw a mock. Oh, I forgot his name now. The lefty starter out of Kent State. I saw a mock where it's Noth, like we were just talking about, like a high school pitcher out of Long Island. You know, like, I've seen mocks where it's Wilkin. I saw the Morales mocks before he got too much helium and it seems like he's not going to drop. But like, last year, we could kind of comfortably be like, yeah, they think Jet's going to be there and they're going to get him, you know? Like, that felt like a thing that was happening the entire time, and the Parada stuff was kind of a nice bonus. But it's hard. I feel okay because I liked their drafts a little more recently than I have in the past, but also the system's really bad, and whoever they add in is going to be, they're going to slot in as like a top 5 guy anyway, unless it's a real disaster. you know, unless they go completely out of left field. But I don't know. It's hard because the baseball draft's unpredictable outside of the top 10
at all,
let alone when you're in the 30s. You know?
Made it kind of difficult. I mean, just the exercise that we did last week. We used Baseball America's rankings, MLB.com's rankings, Prospect Live rankings. You could have one outlet that's saying a guy is going to be selected at 40. You could have another outlet that's saying a guy is going to be selected at, you know, 49. And then the third one is saying he's going to be selected at 119.
And even to your point, using those, both of the guys who I picked, the two mocked in the first round guys, one to the Yankees, one to the Mets, are like the 40th and 40 something overall for all three of those sites. Mm-hmm. But they would be going to the Mets because, or the Yankees in these circumstances, because they're trying to cut money.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know if the Mets are trying to cut money. I have no clue if they're trying to cut money right now. I don't even think they know.
Yeah, evaluating talent, you know, all these outlets, evaluating talent and just kind of making a numerical list is subjective enough. And then on top of that, you have, like exactly what you're saying, you have now the motivations of all the different teams and, you know, things that they're looking for that we're not necessarily privy to, that haven't leaked. Strategies they want to employ that we don't know about. So it is really a complete crapshoot.
It is. And the only thing I would say, the thing I feel best about right now is the, as we've said for the 700th year in a row on this podcast, the Mets need an influx of talent in the minors and they have a lot of picks. You know what I mean? Like the Mets need, they need more talent and they have four top 100 picks, I think it is. Or three, and then one is like 101 or something. So it's
three and then 101.
Yeah, so it's okay. So they have four top 101 picks. I'm gonna cheat a little bit. Like that's a great thing. They need that. They need that for trades in the offseason, or they need that for prospects to beef up the minor leagues now, and for the future. And that's where I feel the best is that they've done a good job of as best they could. I mean, really, last year didn't really matter. There was no qualified guys I was really pining for to lose your first-round pick over. But they've done a good job of, like, allowing themselves to get shots at building up the farm. I don't know if it's going to work, but they've done a good job at giving themselves chances so far. That's where I feel best.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they had a clear strategy in the offseason that, you know, they weren't going to lose these picks. They optimize. I mean, regardless of how they're performing this year, Scherzer was a great signing. Verlander was a great signing.
They did all the things they needed to do without sacrificing really any of their future.
Right.
Like, sure, they're going to drop down in the luxury tax draw unless they just continue to free fall and they pick.
Which is honestly not outlandish thing.
Like, if that happens, I'd be a little upset because the season was sucked. But also, by the time 2024 rolls around and they have a whole new slew of signings trying to compete, I would be like, oh, and they get a top 10 pick or whatever it is, whatever the protected lottery number is. But
six. So
yes, six. So if they finish with if they get in that top six and also still spend a lot of money, then who really cares? But in all seriousness, like they're walking a tightrope on trying to compete and also trying to build the farm at the same time, and I really appreciate them doing that because it could be real A's hours over here and they could suck. Yeah,
that is something that historically did not really happen. When you have your teams that are just perennial losers that are always beefing up the farm system, the Marlins, your Nats in the 2000s, your A's in the 2010s. You know, they would be really, really bad and not competitive at all at the major league level. At least the Mets, on paper, were competitive this year. And last year, they were competitive in actuality. So,
and Steve Cohen has too much money, frankly, for them to ever be like not trying. Like, because they can and will, for basically any player, spend more money than whoever they are up against in negotiations. Whoever they want. That's not how they want to run a team in the long term, and of course they won't do that when eventually they figure out player development. But that doesn't mean they're not going to still sign really good players. It just means they won't sign the Starling Martes and the Marcanas of the world. Like, those guys are the guys they don't sign, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like they're going to see the superstars of tomorrow become free agents and be like, nah, we have some outfielder that is fine. It's more like we don't have to sign Starling Marte to this medium-sized contract that now looks bad because he looks washed, because we have plenty of prospects who could do something similar. We could spend our money on, I don't know, who's a young guy who might be a star, an Ellie De La Cruz if he hits free agency, because, you know what I mean? Like, that's really what it is. So they're treading a line, and it's tough, and they need to figure out player development before they really do anything else with the minors.
Yeah, that is, at the end of the day, that's the key, because once that starts going, then you start churning out more guys, like you say, then you don't need to sign the marginal free agents, and you can concentrate on the big names. And
yep. And I mean, look at the Dodgers. They pick late every year. I have a top system every year. Just because the Mets are picking 30 doesn't mean they're not going to get a quality guy. It depends what happens after, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that has been the major problem, is that the Mets either intentionally, you know, tanking those later rounds so they could afford the top couple, or just bad picks in general has kind of really put it's really bottlenecked the system.
Yep.
Well, hopefully that is not the case this year. All right, well, next time we broadcast, it's going to be draft night. Those are always fun.
Yes.
Staying up late, podcasting. It's living the dream, baby. All right. So if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there, if Twitter still exists. And if you still are allowed to look at your tweets, if you don't go over your limit, you should definitely dedicate all of your limited page views, though, to our tweet feeds.
All 600 tweets that you could see.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tweet 600 times just to fill everyone's queues. I'm at Steve Sipa there. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191, and Thomas is at SadMedSeason, SZN. Obviously, if you are not, please subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts from, rate and review it, and thank you for listening. And a reminder, we are now Patreon-based, so if you do like our podcast or any of the other ones that are in the Homer and Apple Network, you can subscribe for $5 a month. And you'll get some extra stuff like bonus content and special episodes. And we are going to be making a better effort at delivering all that stuff to you guys out there. So we will be back next week on draft night. Until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.